This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Skidding his way into the Big Apple. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Friday, October 28th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what's up this hour.
A plane carrying Republican vice presidential nominee Mike Pence ran off the runway in rain last night at New York's LaGuardia Airport. No injuries.
A man who saw the Cubs last play in the World Series in 1945 is going to see them again tonight. The story of this World War II vet is later in the hour.
Another batch of Clinton-related emails. One official tied to the Clinton Foundation refers to the overlap of fundraising and personal business as Bill Clinton, Inc.
And the best cities to develop and invest in property.
One of the things we do every year, and we're proud of it, is to rank the cities that are most popular for investment, home building, and development for the upcoming year. And Austin is the number one city.
Mitch Rochelle from PwC has a look at trendy real estate in about 20 minutes. Republican vice presidential nominee Mike Pence made quite the entrance to his scheduled fundraiser last night when his charter plane landed at LaGuardia Airport in New York just before 8 o'clock. It skidded off the runway in the rain and wound up in some grass. The plane was carrying 48 people, including members of Mr. Pence's staff and reporters. The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which manages the airport, says there were no injuries and everyone on board got off the aircraft safely. Pat Foy, executive director of the agency, says safety features at the end of the runway did their job.
Approximately 80 arrestor beds were destroyed. Arrestor beds are FAA-required installations at the end of runways to do exactly the purpose that they serve tonight, which is to slow down an aircraft that is approaching the end of the runway.
The airport was briefly shut down after the incident, but was reopened later in the evening. Mr. Pence, the governor of Indiana, had arrived from Iowa. Reporters say after the plane landed, he went back and checked on them to make sure they were okay. More than 125 people protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline outside Bismarck, North Dakota, have been arrested. The heavy police presence yesterday and the multiple arrests mean that while the protest is not over, it is unlikely that large numbers will quickly be able to regroup later today. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Supporters of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe had earlier set up tents and teepees on the land, which they said belongs to the tribe under a treaty from the 19th century. Around 200 other demonstrators were pushed back around 2 miles to their main encampment. As the standoff continued, police deployed beanbag rounds and pepper spray gas and unleashed a high-pitched siren to disperse the crowd. The Dakota Access Pipeline is proposed to transport crude oil from the Bakken region through South Dakota and Iowa and into Illinois. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. 9 minutes now after the hour. Well, a federal jury in Portland has acquitted Ammon Bundy and six followers in the armed occupation of a wildlife refuge in Oregon last winter. It was a case that, you might recall, put a national spotlight on the issue of federal land control in the West. The jury found Mr. Bundy, who's 41 years old, and the others not guilty of conspiracy to impede federal officers through intimidation, threats, or force in the 41-day occupation of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge in the southeastern part of the state. Activist Neil Wampler was among those acquitted.
This shows the absolute folly that has been committed by the federal government in this case, and the nature of this case being simple political persecution rather than based on any actual criminal activity.
However, the acquittals don't mean they're all completely free. The Bundy brothers and five others from the Oregon occupation have also been charged in a confrontation with federal officials near the family's ranch in southern Nevada. That trial is set for next year, and the Bundy brothers remain in custody on the Nevada charges. It's 10 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. America's First News.
Whether traveling or working remotely, we know your PC is your business headquarters. And when work takes you on the go, you need a laptop that can keep up. Dell's XPS 13 empowers small business owners to collaborate anywhere with incredible battery life and powerful performance. Reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times faster performance when you refresh to new Dell PCs featuring Intel Core processors. Explore the XPS 13 at Dell.com/radio. If you're looking to grow or relocate your business, there are 3 numbers you should know. 10, 2000, and 6. 10 stands for Michigan being one of America's top 10 states for business. 2000 is the number of burdensome regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years. And 6 stands for Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climates. All those numbers add up to the one state that has all that and more. Michigan. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. That's MichiganBusiness.org to learn more.
Glad you're with us. Hope your Friday's off to a good start. You know, Election Day is just 11 days away. For many Americans, it can't come soon enough. One reason, the divisiveness of this year's presidential campaign has seeped into American workplaces. Are you seeing this? Raising tensions among coworkers and forcing bosses sometimes to mediate disputes. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter John Simons. John, what are you hearing?
It really points to the very difficult position that a lot of managers are finding themselves in this election year. And, you know, a recent study by the Society for Human Resources Management found that human resources professionals are reporting greater tensions in the workplace this year than in previous years. About 52% of them say that that there's greater tension in the workplace as a result of these two, you know, what we know as very divisive candidates this year.
Yeah. So is it the candidates' personalities themselves, or is it the way the candidates are actually behaving? Any way to kind of pin down why this year?
Well, I mean, you know, this has been reported elsewhere, and everything we know about the candidates is that they're very divisive for you know, various reasons. People on both sides are just, you know, asking their coworkers to either, you know, justify who they're planning to vote for, or there's a feeling, there's a perception that you know, people who are voting for one candidate or the other are not fully committed so that they're able to be convinced. And what managers are finding is that, you know, people are just wasting a lot of time trying to convince each other and talk about these two candidates. And, you know, they're getting into arguments, as some of the examples in the story show.
Wow. So what happened to that example at the beginning of the story where the one guy said, you know, either that my colleague goes or I go, I can't stand talking about it and debating anymore?
The CEO of that company is, you know, he is really struggling with this decision. You know, as we said in the story, he was issued an ultimatum, and this guy who issued the ultimatum is responsible for a good portion of the company's sales. So the CEO says he doesn't want to get rid of this guy. So he's hoping that something happens in these next few weeks that causes this sales executive to back down from the ultimatum. He really doesn't want to make this sort of, you know, either it's her or me decision.
Jeez. We're speaking with John Simons, Wall Street Journal reporter, Deputy Bureau Chief of Management and Careers. His piece is called Bitter Presidential Race Breeds Workplace Tensions. What's the, I don't know, what's the advice on how to manage this, John?
You know, it's very difficult. Managers are in a very difficult position because of laws that protect union organizing in the workplace. You really can't outlaw certain types of speech that that is related to the treatment of workers or your wages, and so, you know, they can't make a blanket sort of rule that says don't discuss the election. But at the same time, some speech that's related to policy issues in this election has to do with, like, protected classes. You know, discussions of immigration can get very dicey. Discussions of homeland security can get very dicey. And sort of, you know, offend people of certain races, and it's just, you know, it's a real bind for managers.
Boy, I guess you've not only got colleagues who might be having at each other, but as you know, somebody who's passionate, you got to be careful about alienating clients too, right? Who are outside your firm.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's something we didn't really get into very much in the story. But it's, you know, it really does come down to kind of like, you know, managers can suggest that people not discuss, you know, the old sort of don't talk about religion and politics in the social sort of settings. And especially when you're kind of representing your company out in the world.
Thanks, John. The Wall Street Journal's John Simons. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, everyone is safe after Republican VP nominee Mike Pence's plane skidded off the runway in New York. Pat Foy with the Port Authority says the plane stopped short of a highway.
It was relatively close to the Grand Central. It would have been hundreds of feet away if I had to guess. And fortunately, that was not in place.
Pence's scheduled fundraiser in New York was called off. A trusted source confirmed to NBC News that Vice President Joe Biden is under consideration for Secretary of State if Hillary Clinton wins the White House. Politico first reported that Biden is at the top of the internal short list of the Clinton's transition team's list for the post. Donald Trump says continued revelations from WikiLeaks show Clinton was corrupt while she was Secretary of State, accusing her of putting the office up for sale. Stumping in Ohio, he called a campaign donation from the Democratic governor of Virginia to the wife of the FBI official investigating Clinton's emails suspicious and vowed that if elected, he would reopen the investigation that found Clinton committed no crime. More than 100 people were arrested when police cleared protesters from property near the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline Project. Officers in riot gear and two armored vehicles advanced on activists blocking Highway 1806 across private land in South Central North Dakota. Native American protesters say they own the land under an 1851 treaty with the federal government. A jury is siding with the leaders of the standoff at an Oregon wildlife refuge. Ammon Bundy and six co-defendants were charged with conspiracy to impede federal employees at the Malheur Wildlife Refuge during a 40-day long occupation earlier this year. All seven defendants were acquitted of the federal charges against them, defense attorney Matt Schindler.
These are men and women that were committed to an idea and willing to go to court with the federal government, and they prevailed. It's extraordinary.
Four of the defendants also acquitted on gun possession charges. Nearly one in five Americans say they've seen a ghost. A Pew Research poll finds nearly 30% of Americans say they have been in contact with someone who's already died. Police who go to religious services on a regular basis are 12% less likely to say they've had visitors from the spirit world.
While I do find this stuff somewhat interesting, I don't subscribe.
Well,
no, not a ghost believer.
It's a spiritual thing, the parallel universe thing.
I see. I follow.
Okay.
23 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us. Happy Friday to you. Wondering where the hot spots are for developing and investing in property? PwC is out with its annual report about emerging trends in real estate. Mitch Rochelle is the real estate research leader at PwC. Mitch, give us some findings.
One of the things we do every year, and we're proud of it, is to rank the cities that are most popular for investment, home building, and development for the upcoming year. And Austin is the number one city.
All right. And these cities, like Austin, number one, you got Dallas, Fort Worth, number two, Portland, number three. Why? What is it about those cities?
There's a couple of different themes. So Austin's a little unusual in a good way. Sometimes when you say unusual, it's not in a good way. The story about Austin is if you look at the data behind the popularity rankings that are our survey, you see one thing that really stands out. The millennial population in Austin is 35% of the 2 million plus that live in Austin. The national percentage is about 30%. So it's a big difference between 35 and 30%. But moreover, the growth rate of millennial population, which is just about over 2% nationwide, is over 18% for the next 5 years.
Wow.
So that's seven times as fast. That's the story of Austin. It's this hub of job creation, not just in technology, but it's where all the kids want to be. And the way I look at it is, if you remember the movie Field of Dreams, mm-hmm. if you build it, they will come. Austin's sort of the inverse of that. The developers and the investors want to be there because the workforce is already there.
How about that? All right, so say Dallas-Fort Worth, Portland, Seattle, L.A. are on the list for different reasons than that?
Yeah, so if you look at the rest of the top 10 list, there's a big job creation story across all of them, and a lot of that is technology and STEM jobs and so forth. But if you dig through them, who's not on the list, right? So New York is not on the list. San Francisco fell to 10th. I wouldn't be surprised next year if it didn't fall to be out of the top 10. But New York, Washington, D.C., Boston, Chicago, those cities, by comparison, are less affordable to live. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, Gordon, they're less affordable to do business. And the secret sauce of what makes for a growing economy for jobs, and thus why the real estate investors want to be there, is when you have a low cost of doing business and a low cost of living, when those two marry up, then that's where you find prosperity in the economy, and ultimately real estate investors want to be where an economy is prosperous, and Dallas is a really good example of that.
How about Salt Lake City as a city to watch or market to watch?
It's very affordable, and I think we sort of highlighted it because Denver is becoming very inaffordable. I was talking to a Denver resident earlier today, actually, who was just sort of bemoaning the fact that, you know, the house price is just going up at double-digit rates.
Wow.
And Salt Lake has a lot of the same appeal in terms of, you know, recreational activities, and it's just considerably more affordable and has an interesting employment base there, too.
Thanks, Mitch. Mitch Rochelle, real estate research leader at PwC. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Trips to the post office are never convenient, so why not get postage right from your desk with Stamps.com? Stamps.com even gives you special postage discounts you can't get at the post office, including ones for first class, priority mail, express, international, and more. You'll never pay full price for postage again. Stamps.com is easy to use, all from your own computer and printer. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package, then just hand your mail to the mailman or drop it in a mailbox. It's no wonder over 600,000 small businesses already are using Stamps.com. Right now, you can sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer that includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Get started with Stamps.com today. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com. Enter Deal.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Friday, October 28. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. A plane carrying Mike Pence skidded off a runway in New York. Leaked emails refer to the overlap of the Clinton Foundation and their personal and political dealings as Bill Clinton, Inc. Apple overhauls the MacBook Pro. Twitter is shutting down the video app Vine. Tesla today will show off its rooftop solar panel technology. Titans and Jags played in Thursday night football, but it's not clear if anyone watched. And a guy who last saw the Cubs play in the 1945 World Series is going to Game 3 tonight at Wrigley. That story in 20 minutes. A handful of the emails and documents hacked from the private email account of Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman show the sometimes uncomfortable overlap between the family charity and the public and private sector careers of the Clintons. Here's this morning's Mike Gavin.
That's the summary of the latest batch of emails released by WikiLeaks. In fact, a top aide referred to the overlap as Bill Clinton, Inc. In a scathing opinion piece today, Wall Street Journal columnist Kim Strassel writes, "It is astonishingly detailed proof that the Clintons do not draw any lines between their charitable work, their political activity, their government jobs, or their personal enrichment. Every other American is expected to keep these pursuits separate as required by law. For the Clintons, it is all one and the same. The rules be damned." Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. Definitely a scathing piece. Again, that's Kim Strassel writing in the Wall Street Journal. Meanwhile, tech analyst Rob Enderle says what's happened with WikiLeaks and the old video that surfaced with Donald Trump's comments about women is a huge warning about the future. Rob, how so?
Well, so if you look at what's been going on in the election, we saw some things we really haven't seen before, an ability to drill back into the past of the candidates that we just haven't had access to. If you take, for instance, the email problem that Hillary Clinton had, it wasn't until recently that you could even put up your own email server, so that wasn't going to be an issue. And, of course, we suddenly discovered that thanks to a lack of focus on security, email from a whole bunch of people has become visible. So these things that they thought would be private are no longer private, and the same capability exists for all of us. In other words, the things that we're publishing and think are private are no longer private either, and it's very likely in future years those things are going to come back to haunt us. Now, looking at Trump and the video of his unfortunate comments nearly a decade ago, the ability to go back and search and index video has only been a very recent development. Up till a couple of years ago, the videos existed on VCR tape. They might exist in some place like Iron Mountain, but you would never be able to find them. Even if somebody could remember that they might have existed, actually locating the tape would have been nearly impossible. But since then, they've been digitized and indexed, and so you can find this stuff again. And remember, everybody with a cell phone is taking pictures, and with facial recognition, they're being automatically indexed. So that fun little picture or video that you took when you were in college may show up at your next employment interview, and suddenly you're explaining just exactly why you were doing that thing, or maybe they just decide to not bring you in for that second interview, and you'll never know why.
So that said, how will technology change elections going forward? You know, what are we looking at in 2020, for example, or 2024?
Well, I think it means that a lot more stuff that people that are in office or going to be running for office think are private are going to be made public during the election cycle. So that people that kind of have that, you know, during the debates, we had Hillary Clinton asked about whether that she should have a public opinion or a private opinion, of the idea that you can have both.
Yeah,
I don't think that's going to be possible going forward. Your private opinions will be public opinions, and the folks, the politicians that are likely to survive are those folks that are not, that don't have twin positions, that are, that say what they think and think what they say. So that's going to be a huge difference in how we do things.
We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the Enderle Group. He's got a piece running called "This Election May Be Scarier Than You Think." That said, then, is it possible that behavior improves?
You know, I think it's going to have to, because what's going to happen is the folks that behave badly privately are going to be suddenly behaving badly publicly, and they'll be dropped out of the process. So that's going to encourage people to be better people, because trying to conceal the fact that they're not good simply becomes impossible. So just by the factor that folks will move up in status based on their real behavior as opposed to their fake behavior should create more people that are honest and trustworthy, because they have to be.
Emphasis on the word should, right? Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the Enderle Group. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. If you like a little cynicism and sarcasm, you can follow me directly on Twitter @GordonDeal. Time now for our weekly look at what we've been searching for the most online during the past few days. We're joined live by Google Trends expert Stephanie Shi. Morning, Stephanie. Where do we begin?
Hi, good morning, Gordon. Well, this week we have a variety of things that people were searching for on Google, and one of the top things on the list this week is actually a new report that came out regarding cancer deaths in America that were related to cigarette smoking. So a lot of the things that we saw people coming online to search for were questions like how many U.S. deaths are caused by smoking every year. So lots of attention to that this week. It's rather a somber topic, but something that definitely caught people's interest.
All right. All right, on a somewhat lighter note, Michael Phelps.
Yes, Michael Phelps was also trending this week again following the Olympics. And the thing that's catching people's attention is actually news that he already married his fiancée, Nicole Johnson. Now, there's been a lot of speculation on whether or not they have been married. Throughout the Olympics, you may have seen some interviews with them. They repeatedly denied it. But this week, the rumors were actually confirmed as true. And it seems like Michael Phelps is one less fish in the sea this week.
Nicely done there. So that means that... obviously, we were not invited.
I guess we weren't.
No, yeah.
We'll look out for our invite, right?
All right, that's right. Maybe it's just lost in the mail, which,
exactly.
Which of course, then that obligates us to a gift, I guess, too. The Walking Dead, season 7
yes.
premiere, right?
Exactly. Over 17 million Americans across the country tuned into The Walking Dead season premiere this week. Now, for those of you who are fans, you may remember that season 6 ended with a huge cliffhanger. So it's no surprise that this first episode for season 7 was one of the most top watched in the series history so far. Lots of people came to Google just to find out when the series was happening. And I won't give any more away because some of the other questions betray a little bit of a spoiler for you guys who haven't seen it, but definitely worth checking out.
Are you a Walking Dead fan?
I have to say I do not watch the show, but it's been all over my social media feed, so it's a big deal.
On that note, a friend of mine that I went to college with posted on her Facebook page that she's been having nightmares since watching it on Sunday. I thought, wow, that must be some serious violence in that first episode.
You see, there's a reason I don't watch it.
So, there you go. Smart. Why is Justin Timberlake trending?
So Justin Timberlake is trending for a couple of reasons, but definitely this week because he has already cast his ballot in this year's presidential election, and the whole country heard about it because he took a selfie at the booth. Now, here's the interesting thing about this. Turns out it's illegal to take a photo in a voting booth in over 18 states. However, it is legal to take a selfie in a photo booth in 20 states. So lots of people were coming online to find out whether or not, you know, it is legal or illegal in their states, and lots of questions around just the election season in general.
We're speaking live this morning with Google Trends expert Stephanie Shi about what's been trending the most online the past few days. Let me play this clip from President Obama and his mean tweets.
President Obama will go down as perhaps the worst president in the history of the United States! At real Donald Trump. Well, at real Donald Trump, at least I will go down as a president.
We got a little zinger there. Set that one up.
Yeah, you definitely set it up nicely. We have over 11 million views to date of people watching that video. It was only uploaded on Monday. So this isn't the first time Obama has read mean tweets on the Jimmy Kimmel Live show. In fact, it's the second time. He did it last year, and his clip then was one of the top trending videos on YouTube of 2015. But as Gordon played for you, it's a funny video full of Obama reading tons of critical tweets, including the one he played as well as others about his, you know, gym habits and his dance moves. So definitely worth checking out. You can find it on YouTube if you just search for Mean Tweets President Obama Edition Number 2.
Very good. It's a funny bit. Thanks, Stephanie. Google Trends expert Stephanie Shi. 13 minutes now in front of the hour.
If you're familiar with cloud computing, you probably know that Amazon Web Services offers a complete set of secure compute, storage, application, and deployment services that help companies launch and scale their IT infrastructures while lowering costs. But did you know that you're still responsible for protecting your own AWS-based assets, meaning your applications and data, from advanced cyber threats? Protect your AWS with Barracuda Networks Advanced Firewall Solutions. Visit AWS Marketplace or Barracuda.com/AWS to learn more.
8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Rasa Kay is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the plane carrying VP candidate Mike Pence that skittered off the runway at New York's LaGuardia Airport has been removed, but passengers may still be impacted by delays as crews make repairs to the damaged runway. Pat Foy is with the Port Authority.
Happily, there were no injuries. There were 37 passengers and 11 crew on the plane, including Governor Pence. There was no fire condition.
Pence plans to carry out his regular campaign schedule in North Carolina today. Hillary Clinton shared the stage with Michelle Obama there yesterday, using the First Lady's popularity to rally voters in a state that could deliver a knockout blow to Donald Trump.
It will be because we did not stand with her. It will be because we did not vote for her. And that is exactly what her opponent is hoping will happen.
That First Lady said if Clinton loses the election, it'll be on us, her words. Clinton could tap VP Joe Biden to be Secretary of State if she wins the presidency. A source close to her transition team tells Politico Biden is her top choice to fill the cabinet post she herself held for 4 years. Over 100 protesters are under arrest in North Dakota. Officers in riot gear and two armored vehicles advanced on them yesterday near the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline Project, where they were blocking a highway. Officials say the land's private property. Native American protesters say they own it under a treaty with the federal government. Dark smoke is rising above the northern Syrian city of Aleppo as rebels wage a large-scale offensive to break the government's nearly two-month siege of opposition-held areas. A reporter inside the city on the pro-government TV channel reports attacks on all sides. Sounds of heavy gunfire, mortar fire, and explosions were heard in the background. A New York woman is suing the Resorts World Casino there for what she calls a heartbreaking bait and switch. Katrina Bookman, who was playing the slots in August, when to her great joy, the machine showed her she had won almost $43 million. The machine was impounded, and Katrina was told to collect her winnings the next day.
I said, "So what did I win?" He said, "You didn't win nothing."
The casino insists the machine was malfunctioning, and so they don't owe her anything.
Oh, man.
Yes, she has lawyered up.
Okay, I can see that.
Ow.
How about that emotional swing?
How about right? The plans you make, huh?
Right. Ugh. Thank you, Rasa. Mm. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Well, how about this story? A World War II veteran who attended the last World Series at Wrigley Field in Chicago in 1945 is going again tonight for Game 3. McClatchy News Service says Jim Schlegel, who lives in Elgin, Illinois, was there when the Cubs lost the World Series to the Tigers then in 45. He was 26 years old, just finished serving in Pearl Harbor, paid $7.50 for his box seat. Well, he's 97 now, and he'll be there in the front row thanks to a viral social media campaign started by his granddaughter, who started a GoFundMe page on Sunday looking to raise 10 grand for a few good tickets. The power of social media did the rest. Then Marcus Lemonis, host of CNBC's The Prophet, heard about the story. Lemonis had, in the previous few days, been searching for a fan to join him in the front row for Game 3 on Twitter. When he read a local news story about Schlegel, his search was over. 97-year-old Jim Schlegel going to see the Cubs tonight. Game 3. Last saw them in the World Series in 1945. For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.